Welcome to the Line of Fire, Mike's Dr. Alex McFarland.
It's time for the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here, so honored to be sitting in for Dr. Brown. He's traveling. He's headed to Australia. Hope you're keeping him in prayer. And we have got a power-packed show today, folks. You will want to stay to every moment of the Line of Fire. Today we're going to hear, we're trying to get on the line, our first guest, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest of North Carolina, which we think we'll have any moment. We're also going to have a pastor, Dr. Mark Cowart, from Colorado, who's got a national conference called Breaking the Silence. It was held last year, an amazing conference with people like Tony Perkins, General Gerald Boykin, and it's about some of the moral issues of our day. We've got an author, Marianne Herring, and she's going to talk to us about raising a reader in a Wi-Fi world. If you're a parent and you're wondering, you know, will my kids read books? Then you want to hear Marianne Herring. And then in 1 hour, we have Dr. David Jeremiah, beloved pastor, best-selling author. And so we look forward to having these guests on. We look forward to hearing from you. My name is Alex McFarland. I'm a writer and a speaker, Christian apologetics teacher, and a great fan of Dr. Michael Brown. And so it's always an honor when he asks me to sit in for him. And, you know, I want to give a quote here. Will Durant, I don't know if you know this name, but Will Durant, he won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He was an author, and he, with his wife, Muriel Durant, wrote a series of books on the history of Western civilization. And so he was interviewed by the Chicago Sun-Times before he died, and listen to what Will Durant said. He said, "I survived morally because I was taught the moral code along with religion. While I have discarded the religion, which was Roman Catholicism, you and I are living on the shadow of that moral code." Listen, one of the greatest historians of the last 100 years. "We are operating in America on the Christian ethical code, which was given to us, but unfused with Christian faith. What will happen to our children? We are not giving them an ethics imparted with a Christian faith. They are living on the shadow of a shadow." So let me translate this. He was saying he was raised on the Christian ethic here in America, even though at the time he wasn't a Christian. Now, he later became a Christian before he died. Will Durant did become a believer before he died. But he was saying, look, even though by the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, the Christian faith was beginning to wane, but we are living on the vapors of this Judeo-Christian moral code, what about our children who don't have Christianity? They're living on the shadow of the shadow of the shadow. My point in that is that we need to restore belief and morality here in America. So when you talk about things like the bathroom bill, when you talk about gender and gender dysphoria and people that want to, you know, turn from a male to a female, besides just arguing against reality, fighting nature itself, what all this is doing is serving to undermine the moral code that was the foundation on which our Declaration of Independence was written, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. And that's why it's not just about religion. This is about civility. This is about the very parameters that make for a civilized society. And so yesterday we had Abraham Hamilton III, he's general counsel for the American Family Association, recently met with the board of Target and was pretty much just shown the door. Why would we ask you to sign a boycott Target pledge? Why would we urge you to vote and stand up for morality? Because it is the epistemic foundation of our country and our freedoms. More on the Line of Fire from Alex McFarland when we return. Stay tuned.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Alex McFarland sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. Very honored to be doing that, and doubly honored to have the first guest on the line that we've got today. This is Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest here in North Carolina. Wherever you're listening in America, Dan Forrest is the Lieutenant Governor under Governor McCrory here in North Carolina. And let me just say thank you, sir, for making time to be on the Line of Fire.
Well, Alex, it's good to talk to you again. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
I remember a couple of years ago in Charlotte, you graciously came and spoke at our conference, Truth for a New Generation, in front of a couple of thousand young people, and we gave an award to you, and we were honored to do that. But a lot to talk about in a short time to do it. Talk to us. The eyes of the nation have been on North Carolina regarding HB2. And I want to say, as a person who understands the moral foundations that our founders had in view when this nation was birthed, thank you, Governor Forrest. Thank you for, I believe, very courageously standing up for ethics and morality. But just give us a synopsis of what that's been like in these weeks where, really, though you all were doing the right thing, you came under great fire for having done it.
Well, you know, Alex, you kind of have to back up and realize that this was more of a planned attack from the left than anything else. It was certainly the Charlotte mayor who and city council who were trying to create a solution for a problem that didn't exist down there. And in doing that, they passed an ordinance that was unconstitutional. But it's interesting how the media immediately jumped on the governor and the General Assembly in North Carolina for passing legislation to strike down that unconstitutional ordinance when the real firestorm should have been against the mayor of Charlotte. I mean, really what the General Assembly did was try to the best of their ability to maintain the status quo as it had been in North Carolina. Say men use men's rooms and women use women's rooms. And by the way, city of Charlotte, you can't tell all the businesses in your city what to do and how to operate under public accommodation law because that's something the state does. And so the state had that authority. They had to strike down the ordinance. So really all the firepower should have been against the city of Charlotte, their mayor, and their city council for doing that, not against the General Assembly. But really what you find out is it's not only an ideological battle, it's also a political battle that we're in. Governor's up for re-election. I'm up for re-election, as well as obviously the whole General Assembly. And a short window here, 5 months away. And so when you want to have control back of the state of North Carolina as the left has for some time, then they're going to use any opportunity they can, and this is one of those opportunities.
Well, in Raleigh, how many of your fellow legislators, you know, really get it? I mean, if we abolish any moral code, if we abolish moral and ethical boundaries, we really don't have a context in which our laws and our Constitution can be lived out. I mean, how many of your peers really get that?
Well, I think the majority of them do. I think that, you know, that's why it was pretty easy to call the special session. The Speaker and I had the opportunity to call the special session with the written signatures of the majority of the House and Senate members, and that wasn't a difficult thing to do. I think they got it. I think, you know, what you always have is you have a whole lot of pressure coming against a lot of people. North Carolina becomes the tip of the spear, if you will, for this national attack, not just that happened in Charlotte, but it became a national issue when the Justice Department with the federal government got involved, Loretta Lynch got involved and told us that they were going to cut our funding in North Carolina for education and housing and transportation and everything else if we didn't repeal the bill, which was a major overstep on their part. And then she went so far as comparing HB2 to the Civil Rights Act of 64 and 72 and saying that this was like Jim Crow laws in the South. And then you have the president come out the next week and say that all schools had to open up their bathrooms and allow boys to play on girls' sports teams. So it was an amazing onslaught in a very short period of time. So I think certain people start to get a little worried and a little scared when those kinds of things happen. But, you know, the way I see it right now is the General Assembly and the governor have been standing strong, and I think they'll continue to stand strong as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, and I know there are people because, you know, I'm on the road speaking every weekend. I've been in 23 states in the last 10 months. Many citizens across America, like myself, are watching with bated breath, frankly praying for you, Governor Forrest, praying for Governor McCord, and just hoping that you all will stand strong, because this is about the soul of our nation. So here's my question, a twofold question. Have other leaders in other states reached out to you, and your courageous stance has maybe emboldened leaders elsewhere? And is the North Carolina leadership committed to stand strong for HB2 and for ultimately morality?
Well, as I see it now, I think the leadership is committed to stand strong. And yes, I have actually heard through the grapevine that other leaders across the country have been emboldened by the stance. And so I'm proud of that. It's good, you know, to hopefully can be an encouragement to other states for standing up against this kind of one overreach in an unconstitutional ordinance from a city, any city. But like Charlotte, the same happened in Houston a year ago, and it was struck down. But also, this is the first time that I know that the state has really stood strong against the federal government, against the Obama administration, for really what I believe is a very shameless act when you start to compare bathroom privacy to Civil Rights Act and trying to change the definition of what sex means in the Civil Rights Acts of 64 and 72. And so I think that's just a shameless act. But go a step further than that, it would be more shameless from a Loretta Lynch that, you know, this is like Jim Crow laws in the South. And Alex, you know as I do, the color of your skin has absolutely nothing to do with the bathroom you use or where you sit on the bus or what lunch counter you sit at or anything else. But your biology has everything to do with what bathroom you use. And mm-hmm. So to even make a statement like that is shameful by the Justice Department. So, you know, we said, you know what, we got to stand up and stand strong for this, because one, our Constitution absolutely does matter, but two, the moral fabric of the nation, like you said, is at stake here.
Exactly. Well said, Lieutenant Governor. Well, what about, has there been more pushback from corporations and celebrities, or has that kind of died down?
Well, it certainly died down. I mean, you're not reading about it on the front page anymore. Now it's on page 8. But the media is going to continue their attempt to twist what happened here. You know, and the day after our bill was passed, the language all over the country was, this was the most anti-LGBT legislation ever passed in the history of America, when all we did was say that men have to use men's rooms and girls have to use girls' rooms. And so, you know, that was unfortunate that they chose that tack, but that's obviously what they're going to do. And so they're still on that pathway right now. And so, you know, we're still going to be fighting this for some time, just getting the truth out. That's always our challenge, is how do you get the truth out when the media buys their ink by the barrel, you know, and they can launch a nationwide or worldwide campaign against you. But, you know, here's the hypocrisy of even the business community on this. What our legislation did was say, businesses, you can do whatever you want. So PayPal, who decided they weren't going to expand by 400 jobs in North Carolina and pull those 400 jobs out of here, they said, you know, we said to them, PayPal, you can do whatever you want. If you want to take the signs off your bathrooms, you can do that. Alex, that's a little-known fact about the Charlotte ordinance that nobody really talks about, is their ordinance literally said you could not have a sign on bathrooms that say men's room, women's room, boys' shower, you know, girls' locker room, whatever it may be. They call that sex discrimination. And so opening up the doors, obviously, for people with all kinds of ill intent to go in and take advantage of people with those facilities. But even more basic than that is just the basic right to privacy that is denied the vast majority of people in this country should the Obama administration and the Justice Department get their way on this. So really, that's why we are fighting this so heavily.
Well, and God bless you for it, because, you know, I speak a lot of universities, and I know one of the real ideologies that's being forced on young people these days is egalitarianism, that there are no differences. But yet science tells us, I'm reading a book right now by one of the world's preeminent neurosurgeons, and she says that there are differences between males and females. This is scientifically indisputable. But all of this to forbid there being designations on male or female bathrooms or locker rooms, it's a real philosophy that is chipping away, if it's allowed to go unchecked, is chipping away at the foundation of America. And again, I just want to say, and I know I speak for millions of listeners, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, thank you. thank you for being willing to be courageous. Let me ask you this. We've only got a few moments left. The election is coming. Give us a word. There are many citizens around America that I think the last two decades have passively watched the news unfold. Talk to us about the need for the citizenry to be informed, engaged, registered to vote, and part of the electoral process.
Well, I mean, it's no more important time ever, and I think that's going to be true for every election moving forward. Alex would say that every 4 years or 2 years, but this is more important now than ever. There's certainly campaigns being run against us by outside forces, and we won by the slightest of margins last time. So
we've got a break.
Who wants to help?
Lieutenant Governor Danforth, thank you so much. The Line of Fire is back after this. Stay tuned, folks.
Hey, this is Michael Brown. I want to invite you to join me for our second ever trip to Israel, February 25th through March 6th, 2017. This is a great opportunity. I get to interact with you, our radio listening audience, and our ministry partners as we experience the land of Israel together, and it will be a life changer. We've got a great price on the trip, and if you're one of our monthly supporters, our torchbearers, you're eligible to receive a special discount for this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Space is limited. And we're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip, to secure your spot, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Israel banner, or call our office at 704-782-3760.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Alex McFarland, so honored to be sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. And let me just say, my website is simply my name, alexmcfarland.com. So honored to link arms with Dr. Brown. I've just loved and respected him for so long. We've been friends for, I guess, a little bit more than a decade. I mean, I've known of him for a long time. And, you know, Dr. Brown represents so many things. He's a scholar, he's a shepherd, but he's a man of great courage, and God is using him in a great way, and he speaks out on things that need to be said. Well, somebody else that is in exactly that same mold is the person I want you to meet right now, and I want you to listen very carefully, because just as the lieutenant governor was telling us about this moral battle we're in, Dr. Mark Coward is doing something about it. And like Michael Brown, few people I know are holding the torch of the gospel, defending the faith, and empowering tens of thousands of lives. Few people are doing it like Dr. Mark Coward. He's the founding pastor of Church for All Nations in Colorado and elsewhere around the nation. They've got a big conference coming up in August called Breaking the Silence. You need to know about it. So give a good listen to our guest now, Dr. Mark Coward.
Hello, Alex. It's great to be with you.
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good.
Well, thanks for taking time to be on. We've got a power-packed show. You're a pastor, you're a shepherd of people, but you're also a voice of truth in the culture, which is not always easy, is it?
Well, you know, Alex, what really began to change in my life and in my heart, Dr. Martin Luther King said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. So I began to look around, and as a pastor, I realized there were things that are going on in our nation that we can no longer be silent about. And I made a decision to start speaking up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in what ways have you done that?
Well, it started for me back in 2008. In the summer, I just had a time with the Lord, and I began to sense some things with that upcoming presidential election. And of course, President Obama said he was out to fundamentally transform the nation. And then, of course, we began to see things happen in our nation that were, oh, just shocking. And of course, who would have ever thought we'd be dealing with some of the things we are now? And so I began a series in 2011. Called America the Beautiful, and I centered it around the time of July the 4th, and I just simply began to study our foundations as a nation. And I discovered we have very strong Christian foundations. Our founding fathers were men of faith. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, Alex, we wouldn't have a country if it wasn't for the Bible. We have deep Christian foundations. And what's happened is we've drifted from that. And, of course, you know what Psalms 11 says? If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? So that's when it began for me.
Well, you know, I was the same way. I went, I guess about 20 years ago, 19 years ago, I heard a then up-and-coming speaker, David Barton. Now, he's kind of a household name now, but when I heard David Barton, and he was, you know, showing these documents from our history and people like, you know, Patrick Henry and George Washington and all the founders, how overtly, explicitly Christian they were in their orientation. I mean, it was almost like unbelievable. It was just something I had never heard. I was a product of public school. I had never heard any of this. And it was a very transformative moment. Sounds like it was for you as well.
Well, speaking of David Barton, it happened to be an article of his that he wrote. It was 3 pages long. It had 101 footnotes, and it was entitled The Black Robe Regiment. And I had never heard that phrase, Alex, and I thought, well, maybe that was some type of a judicial thing or something. You know, judges wear black robes. Well, then I came to find out something I had never heard taught all of my years in Bible school and in public school, and I don't even know that Christian schools teach it, but the Black Robe Regiment is simply a backhanded comment the British made at the founding era of our nation. And they basically said, you know, if it hadn't been for the pastor and the clergy, i.e. the Black Robe Regiment, we'd have won this revolution. And then secular historians have confirmed this, that had it not been for the pastors and clergy of the day, there never would have been a revolution. And they've also determined, had the revolution begun without the pastors and the clergy's participation and involvement, it wouldn't have been sustainable. So the bottom line is that we wouldn't have a country if pastors had not been vocal and speaking up.
Yeah. Well, talk to us about the Breaking the Silence Conference. For those just tuning in, this is The Line of Fire, Alex McFarland, and our guest, Dr. Mark Cowart, Church for All Nations. And I want you to talk about the need of pastors to speak up, but you've got a conference that's a resource that are going to equip people to speak up with effectiveness.
Yeah, this is exciting. And, of course, you were there last year. That was our first one, Breaking the Silence. And the theme last year was Our Nation, Your Voice, and God's Plan. And this year, it will be August 21st through the 24th in Colorado Springs. And that is a Sunday morning through Wednesday night. And speaking of David Barton, David is going to be one of the speakers. My good friend Andrew Womack, who's the founder of Karis Bible College up here in Woodland Park.
Sure.
General Jerry Boykin, of course, our mutual dear friend, Kamal Saleem, who's a former jihadist, and a host of others, Alex. And basically, what that is, you remember Dietrich Bonhoeffer said this. He said, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. And, you know, I grew up in West Texas, but who would have ever thought we would be dealing with situations of men going into women's bathrooms and things of that nature. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. We have a serious threat in America from radical Islam, and people are afraid to speak up. And unfortunately, we just saw a travesty this last weekend.
I know.
And 49 people are dead. And Alex, it's all because people are not speaking up. And that's why the Lord dropped this into my heart last year to break the silence. This year, our theme is focusing on the power of one.
Hold that thought, Dr. Cowart. This is The Line of Fire. We've got a brief break. We're going to continue this conversation about breaking the silence and speaking the truth after this break. Don't go away.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're back. Alex McFarland here sitting in for Dr. Brown, who's on the road traveling. Our guest, Dr. Mark Cowart, Church for All Nations. Dr. Cowart, before we resume the conversation, give us a website on the Breaking the Silence Conference.
It is BreakingTheSilenceConference.com. Again, Breaking the Silence Conference, and that's spelled out, BreakingTheSilenceConference.com. And you can go online and register. There is no charge for it, but we do need to get people registered.
And folks, let me say, I used to live in Colorado Springs. It is one of the most exquisitely beautiful places in North America. Easy to get into either Denver or the Colorado Springs Airport. You'll love it. Church for All Nations, I've been there many, many times. It is one of the most spirit-filled places in the USA, and you will not be disappointed. Plus, I know, Dr. Cowart, you mentioned General Boykin. You know, he was recently in the news. He's a professor, one of our greatest living war heroes, and he's come under the fire for standing for morality too, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. He seems to stay in the news, and of course, he's a personal friend of ours. And I'm telling you, if there's anyone that loves this country, and he says this, one time he was speaking for us, and he carries a copy of the Constitution. And he reads it on a regular occasion. And he pulled it out and he said, when he enlisted in the military, he took an oath and swore to defend that Constitution. And he said there was no expiration date on that defending of the Constitution. Mm. And, you know, we have freedom and liberty that we are allowed to have freedom of religion, not freedom of worship. That's something people need to watch for. Hitler himself didn't care so much if Christians worship. Just keep it in the four walls of the church. But we have freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and he exercised that. And all of a sudden, some LGBT marched down to the college there and demanded his resignation. But what the good news on that was, the students spoke up very loudly, and he was rehired and reinstated there. And, you know, it's become a sad day in America when we cannot express differences of opinion. And it seems like the ones that cry intolerant seem to be the most intolerant.
Sure. Well, you've been a pastor for 30 years, built one of America's great churches. Folks, listen, if you're a pastor, and you really don't speak out on the moral issues, you've got a platform God has entrusted to you that you need to be using. And it maybe you're a parishioner, a church member, and you need to tell your pastor, hey, it's okay, be bold. Get up there and preach. We're not going to bail on you. We're going to support you. Pastor Mark, just give a word to the Christian leaders out there about the importance of being bold in the proclamation of truth at this hour.
Well, I cannot emphasize enough. And if you're a pastor listening or attend the church, I want to encourage you to pray for your pastor, but also speak to him. You know, recently George Barna and David Barton did some research, and they found that the majority of Christians in America are desperately wanting to hear their pastors and leaders speak out on issues such as abortion and homosexuality and political issues that affect all of us. I cannot emphasize enough, and a lot of times people say, well, media is the most powerful thing in this nation, and I really differ with that. I believe that the pulpit is the most powerful force in America because God chose the foolishness of preaching. And I've got numerous testimonies we don't have time to go into of pastors of small churches that have affected entire states. Mm-hmm. And if we are silent, if people can't hear truth and light from the pulpit, where will they ever be able to hear it? So we must speak out.
People everywhere, you need to go to Colorado, August 21 through 24, BreakingTheSilenceConference.com. Thank you, Dr. Cowart. Stay tuned. The Line of Fire is back after this.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here, honored to be sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. Folks, I told you we were going to have a power-packed afternoon, and it's happening. And we're excited about the guests that you're about to meet. Let's talk about happy things for a moment. We've been talking about the culture wars and all of that, but Sunday is going to be Father's Day, a day for the celebration of family and fatherhood and, of course, child-rearing. And one of the quotes that I've loved for years, it's inspired me for years, it's attributed to John Wesley. I don't know if Wesley really said it, but supposedly, John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, said, "Those who read, lead. Those who read, lead." So I don't know who really said that, but it is true. So we've got somebody that is a blogger, has been a blogger for Focus on the Family. She was one of the founding editors of Clubhouse, Clubhouse Junior, and has written a best-selling book, a series for children, Marianne Herring of the Imagination Station series, Focus on the Family. I know you've seen her name in print before, but I want to ask her a question here in a moment. First, I want to say welcome, Marianne. Thank you for being on The Line of Fire.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a privilege to be here, Alex.
Well, thank you. So here's my question for you. You've written on parenting. You've edited books. You've worked for Focus on the Family. You've written one of the best-selling books. I know it's a best-selling series, The Imagination Station, because when I go to homeschool conventions, I see kids all over America carrying these books around. I want you to talk about those. But here's the question. Parents, can they make their kids readers in a Wi-Fi, mobile device, internet world? Can we do that?
Absolutely. As long as kids are interested in stories and weird facts about cockroaches, they will enjoy reading.
Well, weird facts about cockroaches. That's yeah. So how do we do that? I'm everywhere I go out in public, restaurants, the airport. I mean, everybody is like glued to their mobile devices, and psychologists tell us that we retain more when we like physically read a book. I know we do a lot of reading on the screen. But the age where a kid is going to, you know, read up that progression from children's books to, you know, being a reader in middle school, high school, and college, has the age passed when we can hope that our kids will really have a broad base of knowledge because they were a reader?
Well, they can always have a broad base of knowledge, and you don't have to read a book to be absorbing information. So, yes, it is going to look a little bit different this generation than other generations, but all is not lost. Because humans have a curiosity, especially when they're young, and they do seek out information, they will look for it and read it, you know, whenever it's available and it meets their needs. The key is for parents is to meet their needs with books, magazines, and other forms of literature, but to also cut back and control the Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. which is really, really difficult. I'm there. It's so hard. And every year it gets more difficult as my kids have aged. But especially for the younger kids, it's very easy to control and get them interested in picture books. And best thing of all, it's usually free because most communities have a well-stocked children's library.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to the parent who they've not really set boundaries on video games or mobile devices? How can a parent begin to put some structure into their kids' Wi-Fi usage if they haven't really already done that?
Well, I would start by, especially during the summer when school isn't an issue, I would start by offering fun alternatives and rewards. I always find that, you know, honey sells better than vinegar or catches more flies than vinegar. And so I would have, you know, rewards for limiting it and then fun alternatives that probably do involve some kind of literature available for them. it's also better for them, especially in the evening, to cut off the electronics before they go to sleep. You want to do that, even for teenagers, an hour to an hour and a half before bedtime, if you can even establish a bedtime, which I know is hard. I have 17-year-old twins, and having any kind of boundary is very difficult, but I do it.
Well, you know, a lot of parents, because I know I, you know, speak around the country and do parenting seminars too. A lot of moms and dads, they say, but my kids, if I take away the internet, my kids are going to freak out. My kids just kind of have a meltdown. So what do you do when there's a meltdown? Hey, I think we're losing you a bit. Are you
okay.
There?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I haven't moved. I'm sitting here. I have 5 bars. I promise.
Okay. Yeah. So.
The challenges of technology. You know, you could go and move away where you don't get internet access. But the reality is Wi-Fi is only getting better and more invasive. So just like anything like television, every generation has faced the new thing that teens are addicted to. In my grandma's age, they didn't believe that fiction reading was appropriate for young ladies. And so the women had to sneak and read their fiction in private. Times have changed. There's a lot of very valuable, meaningful fiction available to your kids. Bottom line is you have to be a parent and set some boundaries. They will, unless they have, you know, severe psychological issues or even minor ones, the meltdowns, they last a few days, and you just have to weather it. And then you offer interesting material for them to read or other activities, and they will embrace it.
And parents shouldn't fear the meltdown, should they? I mean, they're going to happen anyway, and if your kid has a meltdown because you're putting in structure and discipline, they'll just have to get over it, won't they?
Yes. But you be supportive and patient. You don't want to shame a child for having a meltdown. I had one child in particular who's pretty good at them, and when he was 5, man, he could keep the whole family tied up for an hour and a half until I figured out he could just have those meltdowns in his room.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they got down to an hour and 20. And then when we got down to, oh, it's only 45 minutes.
Well, that's progress.
Now he's my most tractable child of all.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you back down, then it's just going to snowball and you'll have, they'll learn they can manipulate you. And then it's not all over, but it makes it more difficult.
You mentioned rewards for reading. You mentioned rewards for good behavior a few minutes ago. Talk to us about that. So bribing as a parent, it's okay to bribe my children to read?
Oh, my goodness. Do you work for free or do you get a paycheck, Alex?
Well, I do a little bit of both. A lot of what I do is pro bono.
Yeah, it can be a reward. It can be a special dessert. It can be... kids need to be rewarded, not extravagantly. I mean, if they sit down and read for 15 minutes, you know, they don't get a new Porsche, for example. But filling out charts work well for some kids. Just being able to put a star on there and getting some approval for some kids' work, sometimes it doesn't. There are some kids that finding a reward system is more difficult than others, but if you're creative, you can usually find one. You're probably not going to like this. I used to pay my kids to read nonfiction. I had a whole bunch of magazines we subscribed to. They weren't reading them. I would pay them $1 per magazine article that they read. My goal was to keep them reading and to become educated, and they weren't such aberrant are such voracious readers that I went broke, but it seemed to be a fair trade-off, and they did it well, and the bottom line is they took their ACTs and they did okay in reading.
Well,
we got them there. It's not always pretty, but we got them there.
Well, there you go. For those just tuning in, we're talking with Marianne Herring. She's an author, an editor, and a parenting expert, and has been a voice for Focus on the Family. I want to talk about the Imagination Station books, because these are books that kids will read. I mean, we know that. How many are in that series right now? How many books have you done in that series?
18. I'm working on book 19 right now.
And what will that one be about?
That one is going to be about Daniel in the Lion's Den and the history of Babylon, the Jews in exile in Babylon, and it's fascinating.
And so what's the premise behind the Imagination Station? It's historical fiction, right?
It is. I have two characters, Patrick and Beth, and they're nine-ish. And they travel around and witness great Christian historical events.
Hold that thought. Sorry to cut in. This is The Line of Fire. Stay tuned. Alex McFarland, guest hosting for Dr. Brown. We're back after this brief break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown. Hey, folks, you want to stay tuned. We've got a great show. We're talking with Marianne Herring, author, editor, parenting expert. In 10 minutes after the break at the top of the hour, we'll have Dr. David Jeremiah, best-selling author, beloved pastor, and cultural voice. Marianne, before the break, we were talking about the Imagination Station books. So the premise is you've got these two recurring characters who go through great periods of history, and you're teaching history, the Bible, and good values through these stories, right?
Yes, great periods of Christian history. I focus on key Christian moments or biblical moments.
Okay. And so you mentioned Daniel in the Lion's Den. What are some of the other Christian historical moments that the books have covered?
Oh, we focused on Leif Erikson when he brought Christianity over to Greenland. And we studied Rome when Telemachus stopped the gladiator games by jumping into the arena and challenging the Emperor Honorius that it was wrong.
Wow. And
do you want me to go on through all my
things? Yeah, give me one or two more. Yeah.
We did The Redcoats Are Coming, which was, we did the Battle of Lexington and Concord, but we looked at one of the preachers who was preaching and had gunpowder stored underneath his pulpit.
Wow.
So if we can find a Christian angle on American events and other world events, we do, and we present it to the kids so that they know that Christians are brave and courageous and that it does matter. The Christian worldview does matter, and it's worth fighting for.
Well, and what age range are these books aimed at?
Well, they're not really at an age range. They're at a reading level, and it's pretty much smack right on at third grade. And mm-hmm. What I've done is I've looked at the reading statistics for the U.S., and by third grade, a bunch of kids are already behind, about 30% of them. So these books are high-action, very engaging books that even third and fourth graders who are struggling readers will be interested in. But I have a lot of kindergartners who are fans as well.
Wow. I was going to ask you, I'm sure you get some good feedback from older youth and parents, but what's some of the feedback you've gotten from children that have stumbled upon these books?
The feedback that I most appreciate are from boys about 10 and 11 years old who don't like to read. They will write to me and tell me, this is the first book I've ever enjoyed. And so I've written it in such a simple, I don't really back down on vocabulary, but my sentence structure and my paragraphs are short. They can access the material, but it's got a lot of action in it, and they just love it. And so that really was my target audience, is writing for boys who were struggling readers so that they had something. But girls as well enjoy these. My main character, Beth, she's a modern protagonist. She's feminine, but she's also not easily intimidated.
Mm-hmm. And these are thoroughly Christian, and they will affirm rather than undermine the Christian values that parents want to impart, right?
Absolutely.
Well, hey, let me ask you this, because that is great. You know, studies show that, you know, girls tend to be earlier readers than boys oftentimes and do more reading than boys. But you're hearing that, you know, little boys are reading these books. That's great. Let's talk about getting your kids into the Bible, though. What advice do you have for parents about grooming their children to read God's Word?
Well, I think exposing kids to God's Word in any format that they will absorb is wonderful. I did not think I would let my kids read comic books, but I did. As soon as the, I think it was Cook published a very thick book in comic book form, I bought them for my boys because they will read that and they know the stories. Mm-hmm. God's Word was transmitted orally for generations. And so also there's a whole bunch of good Bible story material that takes it out and breaks it down for kids who are struggling readers. You just need to go to your Christian bookstore and spend some money. You can also get the Bible on tape. My boys would listen to the Bible easier than they would reading it. So mm-hmm. I've been there. One of my sons has a learning disability, and it's just really tough to get him to read anything, but he would listen to it. So parents just need to be creative, non-judgmental, and really set aside your budget to spend at the Christian bookstore, because the resources are out there. It's just finding the right one and encouraging your kids to dive in.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so important. I know we've heard this verse ad infinitum, but train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. From the training up of the child to the when he is old, he will not depart from it. Sometimes there's an interval in there, a dry spell spiritually, isn't there?
There can be, and you know, that's just part of growing up. The kids will have to one day identify themselves as Christian apart from the family values, and so they have to internalize those and choose them. But if they have been in a healthy family and have seen those values play out into healthy relationships, peace, love, joy, all of those things, they're really not going to walk away from it easily. They're going to be less inclined to take a bad advice or to pursue something else. But some will. And we that's why the story of the prodigal child is in there. There's no silver bullet. You know, magically get your kids there, but the Holy Spirit is alive and well and has been for eternity, so we can count on Him to reach our children.
Amen.
So prayer is also a part of it, and then making sure your children, I have moved my children around. We stayed at one church, but I have moved them from youth group, occasionally joined other churches' camps, and gone to other churches, Awanas. Like, our church didn't have Awanas, and I love the Awana program. The Bible memorization is just so key. So even if they can't read, the kids can memorize those Bible verses, and those tend to stay. There's like a sweet spot in elementary school when kids can memorize a lot, and that will stay with them for the rest of their lives.
And they need to see Christian commitment modeled in the lives of the parents, don't they?
They do.
Hey,
you have to be consistent.
For the Imagination Station books, what's the website?
TheImaginationStation.com.
TheImaginationStation.com. Well, Marian Herring, thanks for the great work you do for the kingdom. Thanks for being on the Line of Fire this afternoon.
All right. Thanks for having me, Alex.
God bless you. Hey, folks, this is Alex McFarland sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown on the Line of Fire. Hey, we've got an incredible next hour coming up. We'll kick it off with Dr. David Jeremiah. I do want to make you aware of my newest book, Stand Strong America, Facts About Our History, Our Past, the Present, and a Plan for Revival in the Future. Stay tuned. The Line of Fire is back after this.
Welcome to the Line of Fire, Mike's Dr. Alex McFarland.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here sitting in for Michael Brown. So glad to be with you today. You know, we are living in such times that we need a great move of God. And just as Dr. Mark Cowart was talking about earlier, that the black-robed regimen, the pastors that spoke out for truth and for the moral necessity of the American Revolution, even Britain recognized that without that, you know, there wouldn't have been an American Revolution. Have you ever thought about this? And I'll give out this number and we'll ponder this call, 866-34-TRUTH, if you want to call in, 866-348-7884. If 1776 had been 2016, well, let me put it this way. If 2016 had been 1776, would we even have an America? Because, I mean, think about this. As we have abandoned morality, as we have, I'll just give you some of the rundown of some of the things that we've done to, I believe, break our national covenant with God. We've prohibited the reading of Scripture in public schools. That was a 1962 Supreme Court decision. There was a 1963 Supreme Court decision that we've prohibited prayer in public schools, largely manger scenes and crosses and the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, are prohibited from being displayed in public areas. There's a prohibition against posting the Ten Commandments in public buildings. There's a prohibition against teaching creation in public schools. There was a case, Arkansas versus the Supreme Court, and basically evolution has a monopoly on the science classrooms of America's public schools. And then the federally subsidized taking of unborn human life. So much more I could say, but our nation has turned its back on God. And we're going to talk about that and more. So honored to have from California on the line Dr. David Jeremiah, best-selling author, beloved pastor, and voice of truth in our culture today. Dr. Jeremiah, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for making time to be on today. Tell us what's going on in your world and in Turning Point Ministries today.
Well, we're just hanging in there, doing our teaching and preparing, and we just finished a book called People Are Asking, Is This the End? And we're producing all that material for the fall season and trying to stay ahead of everything the best we can.
Well, Dr. Jeremiah, I've followed your ministry for many years and benefited from your research and your teaching. But one of the most significant books I think you've ever done came out a couple of years ago, and it was titled, I Never Thought I'd See the Day. Talk to us a little bit about the premise of that book and what you wrote about in that book.
Well, you know, it was kind of an aha moment for me, as I'm sure it has been for a lot of folks, looking at what's going on in the world today and thinking back over one's life, realizing that the things that are happening in our culture today are unprecedented, and that if we're honest, we never thought we would live to see such a time. And so I began to write some of my thoughts down, and that book was a result of that process.
What are some of the things that many people never thought they would see, but now are just a given in American life?
The marginalization of the Bible in our churches, the loss of the influence of the church in our culture, the anger of the atheistic people against Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got a break. Dr. Jeremiah, hold that thought. We've got a good long segment coming up after this. Stay tuned. The Line of Fire with our very, very special guest, Dr. David Jeremiah.
God of light, hear our cry, send God.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown, our very, very special guest. Just a national treasure, really. Dr. David Jeremiah, pastor of Shadow Mountain Church, one of America's great churches, and a best-selling author. Before that break, Dr. Jeremiah, you were talking about some of the things, and one of the things to which you alluded was the decline of the influence of the church. I have a twofold question. With more than 345,000 churches, millions and millions of Christians, how can it be that the church has lost its influence, and what hope do we have of a restoration?
Well, you know, the church has lost its influence because we forgot who we were. You know, if we are not standing in the middle of the culture with the truth of God's word at the center of what we do, we don't have a purpose. We're meaningless. And as we began to move away from the scripture to try to be more relevant or whatever the reason was, we little by little we lost our voice. And you know, nobody wants to hear a secondhand socially acceptable message in the place where God's holy word used to be. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say it any differently. The church has lost its voice because it's forgotten who it is and why we're here.
Yeah, and the pastors have a really sacred trust to preach the whole counsel of God, popular or not, don't they?
Yeah, but you know, today there's some really powerful young guys out there that continue to teach the Word of God, and I'm so proud of them. But many of the guys who've come through the postmodern wicket are committed to relevance and being accepted by lots of people, broad brushing the gospel and downplaying any restrictive aspect of it, so they can have the greatest possible acceptance. And that's all well and good, except it renders the church meaningless. Because we don't have anything to offer the world except the truth of God's word. When we abandon that, we don't have anything left.
Do we have any hope that America could have another great awakening?
Well, you know, I just wrote a chapter about that in a book I've just completed, and I remember a statement. I forget who it was. Someone gave me the statement and said, over the years, in American history, there have been many times when the culture was so gone, so much so that everybody said America has gone to the dogs. And he said every time that has happened, it's been the dog that's died because God has restored it. And you know, the bottom line is, when we're at our lowest, we're at the best possible place for God to do something. And I do believe that there could be another great awakening, but here's the issue with that. It doesn't start in the world or in the hearts of the unbelievers or in the culture. It's got to start in the hearts of God's people. That's where it's always started. I was profoundly impacted by my study of revival in that it always started at a very, very low time in cultural judgment. It almost always started in the hearts of young people. Young people have been the source of God's dealing with revival in almost every situation. In fact, the modern missionary movement is the result of what's referred to as the haystack prayer meeting, where a bunch of kids got in a haystack to escape a storm and began to pray. Mm. And as they prayed, they began to realize that God was speaking to them, and they all committed to carry the gospel any place in the world, no matter what the cost. And they were the beginning of the missionary movement that we now know.
That's
it's
right.
Always been kids, always been young people. We tend to kind of push them aside and say, what's wrong with our young people? But without them, there wouldn't have been any great awakenings.
Let me pick your brain on something, Dr. Jeremiah. The Jesus movement of the early 1970s, that was a move of God predominantly among young people. And as if I'm correct on this, it was the West Coast. It was birthed out of Southern California, wasn't it?
Yes. It started actually two families opened up some coffee shops for kids, and there's a great story about that. The Rose Parade that year, Billy Graham was the Grand Marshal of Rose Parade, and as he rode through Pasadena in the Rose Parade, he was surrounded by kids who had their pointing their hands up, and they were pointing to heaven, and they were the hippies. They were the Jesus freaks of that time. And history tells us that when Billy Graham saw them and saw their earnestness and their desire to love the Lord, he determined to create a new place in the Crusades for kids, and that's when he started to bring in some of their music and try to reach to that culture. He recognized the vibrancy that was in the, you know, that was Chuck Smith and all those people. Mm-hmm. The Jesus movement was, I remember it. I was alive then, so I remember it.
And I know Greg Laurie emerged out of that, and our mutual friend Josh McDowell. Josh has told me some of it. So let me ask you that. Was that a great awakening, but much of the American church really missed it?
I don't know if you would call it a great awakening. It was certainly a movement of the Lord. And I think the result of it, the impact of it, was a generation later with all of these Calvary churches and all of the young men who came out of that movement, who ended up going out and just taking the core message of the gospel and taking it to communities. If you look back on the history of that, so many of those people were impacted by Chuck Smith and Greg Laurie and others who came, Raoul Ries and others who came out of that whole time. And they're not just here in this country. I was in London, England, with my wife a couple years ago, and I saw there was a wedding going on down in the garden, and I went down and I just happened to run into the preacher. He had just finished the wedding, and it was a Calvary church in London, and he knew who we were, and we had a great time of conversation and fellowship. And that vibrancy of the gospel, the simplicity of the gospel, came out of that movement. And I think it took a generation for it to really grab hold, because those guys are the guys who went out and started these churches.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to the concerned American today? And I know there are many, many, many listeners right now, and they love this country, they love the Lord, but they're saying, I'm only one person, what can I do? What do you say to that individual?
Well, of course, if everybody has that attitude, then nothing will ever happen. You know, you may not be able to do everything, but you can do something. Everybody can do something. And you know, one thing that I'm very passionate about right now, it's become very convoluted because of what's going on in the political landscape. But everybody can vote. And if they don't vote, I mean, last time we had an election back in 2012, there were 25 million evangelicals who were registered who didn't vote. 25 million. And, you know, that to me that's hard to comprehend, because the margin in the election was not 25 million. It was more like 6 to 8 million. So what we have to do is to retake the territory that we can control. We can vote. I'm not sure what to tell people this year, because it's such a hard call. But there are some principles that come into play, and we have to sort those out. And we let our voice be heard, first of all, by not just saying, well, my vote's not going to make any difference. I mean, if we did that in California, we'd never vote. Because California out here, we've been Democratic for so long. If you're a Republican out here or you're a conservative, you could say my vote doesn't matter. But it does matter. It may not matter to the people who count the votes, and it may not matter to the people around you, but it matters to God, because yeah, we've been called upon to be responsible. And if we're not, then we're being disobedient. That really irritates me that those statistics are out there, and they're an indictment against us as Christians.
Don't you think we should look at our vote as really a type of stewardship? I mean, God has entrusted to each citizen the right to vote. I mean, that's a steward issue, a stewardship
Absolutely.
Issue, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is.
How do we begin to look at all of life in terms of stewardship?
Well, I don't know how you begin. You know, you begin to teach it and understand it and realize it, that none of this that we have is ours. It's all an entrustment from the Lord. You know, we teach stewardship at Shadow Mountain in that vein. You know, this is everything you have belongs to Him. You don't own any of it. He owns it all. He lets you manage it for Him. over a period of time. And the Bible tells us that if we're faithful in a few things, he makes us ruler over many. So stewardship is a trust that God gives us. And whether it's in money or time or influence or parenting or whatever it is, we manage it for someone else, and we should be responsible for that.
I think about 1 Corinthians 6:19-20, where Paul says, "What? Don't you know that you're not your own? You're bought with a price." I think that in the American church, we need to remember who the owner is. And hey, folks, we've got a break. We're talking with Dr. David Jeremiah. He's got a couple of new books that we want to hear about. And so stay tuned. The Line of Fire is back after this.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Alex McFarland here sitting in for Dr. Brown, and our guest on the line from California, David Jeremiah. His website is davidjeremiah.org. In the time we've got left, we've been talking about revival for those just tuning in, and we've been talking about kind of where the culture is. I want to talk about a couple of things, Dr. Jeremiah's new books, and also some of the rallies that are going on around the nation. Dr. Jeremiah, you're a prolific author. I thought I knew your canon of content, and then I was looking on the web. How do you find time to write all these great books?
Well, you know, you just said it. You find time, you make time, you do it. I just came through probably the toughest assignment I've ever had in the book that comes out this fall, and I'm not sure I've still recovered from it. It is a very exhausting thing to do a major book like that every year, and you know, you do pay a price for it. I do, and I don't know how to say it. That, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it. It's really hard.
And what is the book coming out this fall?
The book that comes out is being released October the 3rd is a book, and the title of the book is People Are Asking, Is This the End? And it is a book of 10 chapters that deals with many of the questions that people are trying to sort through with regard to what's happening in our world today. The first chapter is called The Age of Anything Goes, and it's about what has happened in the loss of any restraint in our culture. The second chapter is called The Bleeding of Our Borders. It's all about immigration. What is a believer supposed to do with regard to that issue? And there's a chapter called The Apathy of America. What's happened in our culture that we don't seem to care anymore about what's going on. And then over in there's two sections. The first is about what's happening in our country, what's happening in the world. There's a chapter that's called The Resurrection of Russia. What's going on with Russia now that they've reemerged in the cultural landscape? And it's just those kind of things. There's a chapter on ISIS. What is ISIS and what is it doing to us? And so that book comes out October the 3rd. It's our fall emphasis in our rallies and the other things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what a timely release, because I'm listening to these chapter topics, and these are things that I believe would compel most citizens to want to get out and vote, because
that's really the reason I did it, Alex. I sat down one day and I said, you know what, if I'm a believer, what things do I need to really have an awareness of as we come to this election? I must confess that the election's become so crazy now, I'm not sure there's time for anybody to think about anything, but these things are important. As you know, immigration's a big deal in this election. It's kind of the thing that started the controversy in the beginning. I preached the message that I created for this book on ISIS, believe it or not, on Sunday. I woke up and realized what had happened the night before, and it was an eerie experience.
Isn't that something? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's just another indicator of the fact that you're led by God. The Spirit of the Lord is directing you. And, you know, I'm just as sincere as I can be. I just want to thank you. Yesterday we had Dr. Dobson on, and I thank God for you. I thank God for Dr. Dobson. I thank God for Franklin Graham, who's on the road right now with his Decision America tour. And folks listening, we need to pray for these leaders. I mean, God has favored our nation with some courageous people who proclaim the word, like David Jeremiah and Franklin Graham. And, you know, Dr. Jeremiah, you know, I think about the fact how urgent it is what you do. I mean, Chuck Colson is gone. James Kennedy is gone. You know, Jerry Falwell has gone on. And the clarion voices like yours are fewer and fewer out there. So I just want to say thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And I don't feel like I'm Elijah by any means. I know there's a lot of folks out there who are standing for the truth. And you know, you just have to ask God for wisdom, because I've never seen anything like what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys' names that you mentioned, I'm going to be with in a few days, trying to sort out where we go from here. What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
I know that God will help us. He'll give us wisdom. But well, Alex, thank you for having me and talking with me. I know you and I are going to get together here soon. And but it's fun to be with you. And I was a little wondering there when I first heard the announcement that you were Michael Brown. I was glad that you came on and helped me understand who you were.
Well, I'm just sitting in for him. I know we've only got a minute or so. Tell us about your rallies. Are you on the road this summer or this year? And if where may people see you?
We don't do anything again until September. September, we're going to do back-to-back nights in Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I think it's around the 19th or 20th of September, and then in October we do the same thing in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Washington, D.C. And all the information on these events is available at davidjeremiah.org/rallies. The events are free. We have Mercy Me with us in a couple of events. Charles Billingsley is leading worship in all these events, and all the info that you need on it is available at our website, which is davidjeremiah.org.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to seeing you. And folks, I encourage you to pray for this man and the great work he's doing. Dr. Jeremiah, thanks so much for being on.
You're welcome.
And so we are continuing with the Line of Fire. Alex McFarland here. Folks, I do want to give my own website, which is alexmcfarland.com. You know, somebody emailed last night. They said, now, Alex, what all do you do? Well, it's my privilege to lead the Christian Worldview and Apologetics Center at North Greenville University. North Greenville University is a leading Christian college in South Carolina, about 2,800 students. And in just a few moments after the upcoming break, we're going to hear from the Vice President, Dr. Tony Beam. But my passion is to evangelize the lost and equip the saved. I became a believer when I was 21 years old. And I was on the campus of UNC Greensboro in my home state of North Carolina. And I had a couple of friends that had also become Christians, one of whom is a pastor up in Boston, or in Worcester, Massachusetts right now. So we're on the campus of UNCG, and we're trying to share the gospel with some people. I've been a Christian just a couple of days at that point. So a guy fires a question to me. He goes, how do you know there's a God? Why should I put my faith in somebody who doesn't exist? Who knows if there's a God or not? And there were a few other questions, and we became strangely silent because we didn't quite know how to respond. The next day, I went to a Christian bookstore in Greensboro, North Carolina. It was on Battleground Avenue. Some of you, if you're in North Carolina, you might know where that is. But anyway, I bought two books that I've got to this day. They were by a guy named Josh McDowell. Now, I think about the providence of God at that time, because I didn't know, you know, anything about anything. And I'd only been a Christian a few days. But I bought Evidence That Demands a Verdict and More Than a Carpenter. And I began to read these books just with a quest of wanting to answer some of the questions some of my friends had about God. I discovered apologetics, Christian worldview, that not only can we proclaim this good news, we can defend it. And thus, a life trajectory was set. Hey, it's The Line of Fire, Dr. Michael Brown, Alex McFarland. Stay tuned. After this, our very special next guest, Dr. Tony Beam. Don't go away.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Alex McFarland sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown, who is on the road traveling. And also traveling is our next guest, Dr. Tony Beam. He's one of the vice presidents of North Greenville University, a leading Christian university where I have the privilege of serving in the Center for Christian Worldview and Apologetics. Now, Dr. Beam has been to the largest Protestant denominations annual meeting, and we want to talk about that and a few other things as well. But welcome to the Line of Fire, Dr. Beam.
Hello, Alex. It's always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Well, God bless you. Whereabouts are you?
Oh, I'm somewhere in Kentucky right now.
Okay. Well, before we talk about the Southern Baptist Convention, and I do want to hear about that, but you tell us about North Greenville. I can give a great pitch about it, but you, as one of the leaders of the college, just give us a synopsis of that and the website, too.
Well, North Greenville University, hang on, let me change over here to a different audio.
Okay, sure.
Let's see if this is a little bit better.
That is a little bit better.
Good, good. North Greenville University is a four-year school where Christ makes the difference. We have 36 different undergraduate degree majors, five master's programs, and a doctorate of ministry program. And coming soon, in fact, August the 8th, will be the inauguration of our EDD, which is a doctorate in education administration. That'll begin August 8th. We have about 2,600 and 2,700 students. And we're very blessed and thankful to be able to be a witness in our world today and to prepare the next generation of young evangelical leaders.
Yeah, and you know, it's so encouraging. I mean, we hear so much bad news about how the world is growing darker. And I mean, there are some definite challenges, but one of the things I love about being on the campus at North Greenville is, I mean, you meet some of the best and the brightest young people, and they love the Lord, and they love America, and they're quite gifted, and they're earning a degree. And they're going to make a difference. And I, you know, whenever we have chapel and I look out across that expanse of brilliant, godly young people at North Greenville being trained by world-class educators, I have hope. Don't you?
Absolutely. I tell people when I have the opportunity to go speak that they can sleep well at night because there is a generation of young leaders, men and women, coming forward who love nothing but God and fear nothing but lethargy. They are absolutely bold as a lion and being equipped to take their generation into a much better place than what we handed them.
And you know, let me say this. I've been around North Greenville now for 5 years. Mom and Dad, if you're looking for a Christian college that is world-class, North Greenville, unlike many American universities, your Christian values, your patriotism, the core values that you've given your life to, if your sons and daughters come to North Greenville, those Christian values are going to be affirmed, not undermined.
That's right, Alex. Usually I have the opportunity to speak to freshman class, or a lot of times when we're having encounter weekends and parents come in, that's exactly what I tell the parents. I say, you know, you guys have been laboring long and hard to make sure your young people have the right foundation and platform for life, to be able to operate in the world in a way that honors God. And I tell them, I say, look, you send your kids off to the normal, average, secular, private, or public university, and they're going to get 4 years of people chiseling away at that foundation.
I know.
Send them to North Greenville, and we're going to build on that foundation, make it stronger, and give them the tools they need to be a bold witness of the world.
We're listening to Dr. Tony Beam from North Greenville University. Stay tuned, folks, because he's going to give us a report from the Southern Baptist Convention, where he just attended. Don't go away. The Line of Fire is back after this brief break.
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
George Washington, our first president, said this. Now listen to this quote, folks. "You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ." This is George Washington. Listen. "These will make you a greater and a happier people than you are. Congress will do everything they can to assist you in this wise intention." End of quote. We're talking with Dr. Tony Beam, Vice President of North Greenville University, a great school. Moms and dads, I want to give the website ngu.edu. The reason I give that out, and Dr. Beam, you can comment on this, it burns me up. I just want to pull out my hair when, as I travel this nation, I've been in 24 states in the last 10 months, I meet moms and dads, godly parents that have spent their life and their money to raise their kids to love the Lord, youth group, church, Christian school, and then they go away to the university, and it's like mom and dad pay for a four-year attack on America and God, and the public educational system undermines and really fights against what mom and dad have worked 18 years to instill. When you meet young people like this that have become nice little secularists at the state university, doesn't it just break your heart?
It absolutely does, because it's not necessary. There are over 1,000 good Christian universities across this country. And I would encourage believers, Christian parents, I know there's a tendency for people to say, you know, I want my son or daughter who's grounded in the Word of God to go to a place where they can be light in the darkness. The problem with that is that they're being, if they go to a secular university or college, they're going to a place where the darkness is so pervasive and the light is so dim that there's almost no hope for them to make a difference. It's much more likely that their life is going to be forever changed by the skepticism and the constant barrage against their belief system that they're going to have to endure. So I would encourage Christian education, and I would certainly encourage all parents and students to take a look at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. We're very serious about that when we say Christ makes the difference in the classroom and in everything that we do.
And you know, folks, if you happen to be in the Mid-Atlantic region, one of the things that Tony Beam and I do, we've got what we call the Life Answers team, and I'm going to let him tell you about that. But if you're, you know, within, I don't know, 2-3 hours of North Greenville University, we come to churches and we bring these students. It'll just amaze you. These kids, they love the Lord. They're brilliant. They speak. And then they do Q&A, and I don't mean softball questions. I mean the hard questions like, you know, how do we know God exists, and is there any historical proof for Jesus? And the Life Answers team, we'll come to your church, and tell the listeners, Dr. Beam, about how you got the vision for this, because it really is one of the most innovative ministries I've ever seen.
Well, we just, you know, I have a lot of very sharp students, you and I do, at North Greenville University, and I have them in class, and I hear their debates, and I see how well prepared they are to talk about a lot of different subjects, and I thought, wow, why can't we just get these groups together and do what we do in class out in front of the local church or Christian schools or anywhere they'll have us? And so we have 8 scholarship students that make the traveling team. We have 2 alternates who travel with us and fill in if needed. And these 8 students have a very unique approach. They get up on the stage. They have a team leader who presents the topic of discussion. He lays out the argument, and then they begin to take and interact in a format that has become very popular with just about every church we've been into. And then, as you said, after the topic has been thoroughly covered from a lot of different angles by these young men and women, then we take questions from the congregation, and it's become a very popular way of sharing in apologetic ministry.
Sure. And, you know, during the school year, you know, August through May, we probably do about 30 events, and our calendar fills up pretty quickly. But You know, if you want to call us at the Worldview Center of North Greenville University, the best number to reach us, and you'll talk to our assistant, Robin McCarter, it's 864-977-2008. Is that the best extension, Dr. Beam?
Yes, Robin is there. I've spoken to her several times today while I'm on the road, and she'll be glad to take your calls and give you some calendar dates.
So you're on the road. You've been at the SBC, Southern Baptist Convention, and
yes.
What was that like this year?
Well, it was in St. Louis, Missouri. And first of all, it was very hot, but St.
yeah.
Louis is a beautiful, very hospitable town.
Did you eat any barbecue?
Oh, my goodness. Sugar Fire Barbecue right on 7th Street is... We stood in line for an hour and a half, and it was worth every moment. It was
wow.
so good. But, yes, the convention was there in St. Louis, and it was Monday through Wednesday. And, of course, we had the election for president, which is always a big highlight of the convention because the leadership of the Southern Baptist Convention, the churches, the laity, is at stake. And there were two primary candidates, Pastor Steve Gaines, at Bellevue Baptist in Memphis, known for the Prince of Preachers, who Adrian Rogers, who was there for a number of years.
Right,
and then
right.
J.D. Greer, who is also a young preacher who has really made a name for himself, sold a lot of books, an excellent communicator of the Word of God. And the question on the table, really, between these two great leaders is the question of Reform theology, because J.D. Greer represents a younger element of the Southern Baptist Convention, a more reformed element, and Steve Gaines represents the older, more established SBC that is somewhat less reformed in their theology. And the first ballot, you have to get 50% to be elected, and there were three candidates. Pastor Crosby from First Baptist New Orleans was also on the ballot, and since nobody got 50%, they had to do a runoff between Steve Gaines and J.D. Greer. And lo and behold, they tied on the first runoff ballot.
Oh, wow.
But some ballots were improperly, it seems, disqualified. And so it became a very controversial question. And J.D. Greer just decided, you know, I'm going to step aside for the sake of unity in the convention. And Steve Gaines was elected when J.D. Greer declined to be on a ballot for the third time.
Right.
And so Steve Gaines from Bellevue Baptist is the new president for 2016-2017 of the Southern Baptist Convention.
So what was the mood there at the convention? I mean, was it amicable?
It was very amicable up until the presidential election, and I think because of the way the election went, with not one candidate getting a majority, and then the controversy over ballots being disqualified, and perhaps then those ballots not counted as a percentage. I mean, it was there was just a lot of discussion and some disgust expressed and a little bit of frustration there at the end. But I believe that at the end of the day, when J.D. Greer made the decision to concede and step aside so that Steve Gaines would be the president, there was a sense of unity and I think kind of a sigh of relief that we got that behind us and now we're moving forward with Steve Gaines as president.
Wow. Well, what was the response when you were there about the tragedy in Orlando and just, you know, the continual rise of violence in our country?
Well,
I mean, was that addressed?
As far as on the floor, I was in the convention hall in a very limited sense because I spent most of my time at the North Greenville University booth meeting prospective students and talking to pastors from all over the country about the school. But it was on everybody's mind. There was prayer offered. There was, Southern Baptist Convention Disaster Relief Organization is one of the most incredible rapid response disaster relief organizations in the country, and there was discussion about how they could help with the people of Orlando to be an encouragement, and so it was on the minds and hearts of everybody.
Yeah, and they are, and the Baptist men They are just amazing. When there's a tragedy, when there's a natural disaster, when there's human suffering, among the first responders, I mean, right there alongside the Red Cross and
correct.
FEMA are the Southern Baptist, aren't they?
Yes. In fact, the Southern Baptist Convention operates the largest disaster relief organization just behind the Red Cross in the country. I mean, they're incredibly organized, and they do an amazing job.
We're coming up on a break, and so I want to, I don't want to start a long answer to a question before break, but can you hang on even after this break and give us just
sure.
a couple more minutes?
You're
listening to Dr. Tony Beam, Vice President of North Greenville University. This is The Line of Fire, Alex McFarland, sitting in for Dr. Michael Brown, who's in Australia. So stay with us, more with Tony Beam after this brief break.
Join Dr. Michael Brown along with Messianic Jewish pastor Scott Volk for a unique behind-the-scenes tour of Israel, February 25th through March 6, 2017. Space is limited, so we're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip and to secure your spot, please visit our website at AskDrBrown.org and click on the Israel Tour banner or call our office at 704-782-3760.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland, you know, it's been a joy to sit in for Dr. Brown for these 2 days. I do want to make you aware, I've got a brand new book out called Stand Strong America, Courage, Freedom, and Hope for Tomorrow. It just came out literally about 10 days ago. But Dr. Beam and I have an apologetics book coming out. Tony Beam and I have done an apologetics curriculum to really get into your Sunday school, your small group. I mean, it would be appropriate on so many levels to teach your group how to defend the faith, because we think apologetics is pretty important at this time. And I'm pretty excited about that upcoming release, aren't you? Hey, Tony, you there? Dr. Beam? Hello, Dr. Beam. Are you there?
But certainly before Christmas.
Yes. Hey, we had you potted down for a second. When is that going to come out? Do you know?
We believe that it's going to be published. Oksana Press is going to be putting it out certainly before Christmas, perhaps mid-fall.
Wow, that's going to be great. That's going to be great. Now, you've got your own radio show, which is on, I don't even know the station, His Radio.
Oh, it's Christian Talk 660 AM, 92.9 FM. It's a subsidiary of His Radio, yeah.
Yeah, and you've been doing that, what, 12, 13 years?
Actually, coming up on 15 years.
Really?
Just crossed over the 15-year point. And on April 15th, because it debuted April 15th, 2001.
So are you going to do something special for your 15th anniversary?
Well, no, we've already missed it.
Oh, okay.
Because we came through, it was April 15th of this year. But no, we just keep rocking along. It's a couple of hours every morning from 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And we talk about politics. We talk about culture. We talk about whatever is in the news. At the top of the news, that's what comes on the program, and we try to discuss it all within the framework of a Christian worldview.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, and you're a very astute political observer, much more so than me, and I've in the time I've known you, I've really appreciated your analysis of political issues. So the election, you know, a week from Tuesday, I'll be in New York at the meeting with David Jeremiah and James Dobson, Barna, and so many Christian leaders are coming together to have a meeting. Ben Carson is really going to kind of be the moderator of the meeting with Trump. The polls right now, Trump is down a few points.
12 points. Yeah.
Is it really 12?
Yesterday, the most recent poll, but now he's had a a rocky couple of weeks. And during that particular time, Senator Clinton,
Hillary,
Secretary of State Clinton, was able to secure the needed number of delegates to become the presumptive Democratic nominee. So mm-hmm. there's been a lot of things sort of moving in her favor for the last couple of weeks, and I think it's caused Donald Trump to drop a little bit. But yes, right now she's leading in the polls.
Yeah, and you know, she got some good media bump from her just clinching the nomination. I mean, she had some media about that. So between now and November, oh my goodness, there's a world of ups and downs that can happen between now and November, aren't there?
Oh, 4.5 to 5 months is an eternity in politics. So there's a lot of things that can happen. The election is far from in any kind of peril of going to Mrs. Clinton at the moment. But obviously, it would be better to be up by 12 points.
Well, do you have any idea or prognostication about who Trump's running mate might be?
No, I quit predicting things about Trump a long time ago because I got tired of being wrong. So his candidacy, his approach, the decisions he makes, the way he makes them and then expresses them have all been outside of anything we've ever seen, really, in the modern era of political engagement. But I would not be surprised if it was Bob Corker. I would not be surprised if it was Newt Gingrich.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if it were to be a female. I don't know exactly who that would be. I wouldn't rule Governor Haley out, although Governor Haley supported Marco Rubio in the primary in South Carolina, and I'm sure that Donald Trump wouldn't appreciate that. But I think he's going to try to pick somebody who has some Washington or some political experience, but who is also considered to be someone who is not unwilling to rock the system.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about that, there were plenty of people that sided with Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio before Trump ultimately prevailed. And I've talked to a lot of Republicans who said, I will never vote for Trump. Why is it that the Democrats seem to be so more able to unify than conservatives?
Well, normally that's the case, but this time the Democrats have a big problem on their own. Bernie Sanders won a lion's share of the final 15 primaries on the Democrat side. And he, his supporters, many of them, in fact, are saying they're going to vote for Trump. A lot of them say they will never vote for Hillary. So this is a very unusual election cycle in that you have both candidates with high negatives. In other words, in fact, 2 days ago, there was a survey that came out that boldly proclaimed that Donald Trump is disliked by 7 out of 10 Americans.
I saw that.
In other words, 70% of the country has an unfavorable opinion of him. And it's probably 6 in 10 or better on Hillary Clinton. So
yeah, I was going to say like she's liked any better, though,
No, exactly. Both of these candidates have a problem with their base. And it's going to be interesting to see how those things work out as the conventions begin here shortly.
Mm-hmm. Well, time fleets away. I am so grateful to have you on. I've got to ask you this. What is the Beam household like at Father's Day? Father's Day is Sunday, and I know you have built a great family. What's on the docket for this weekend?
Well, Denise has been working on that because I've been out of town, but generally we go out to lunch with as many family as we can gather, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, God bless you. Folks, you've been listening to Dr. Tony Beam on The Line of Fire. Alex McFarland, glad to sit in for Dr. Brown. We look forward to seeing you again sometime really soon. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. My website, alexmcfarland.com.